Fantasy football, you dealing with the best. Keep it hype, authentic, just ain't nothing like the rest. With the Armchair Fantasy Show Podcast, give advice for all the listeners to improve your stats. Yeah, yeah, we live on goingfortwo.com. Tuesdays and Fridays, this is what you want. Talking dynasties and daily drafts, and we just getting started, that ain't even the half. Yeah, so go ahead, tell your friends to join Going for Two, cause no one remembers the extra point. Hey, goingfortwo.com, the Armchair Fantasy Show.
What is going on, guys? All right, welcome to episode 160 of the Armchair Fantasy Show. I'm your host, of course, Jeff Lambert. You can follow me on Twitter at JeffLambert77. We are live every Wednesday and soon to be Friday as well on Periscope Live, YouTube, and Facebook Live. Syndicated on all major podcast networks and, of course, streaming in the Going for Two app for iOS and Android. I'm here, as always, with my co-host, Mr. Ryan Searfoss. Ryan, how you doing tonight, man?
Dude, awesome. I mean, season's upon us. It's draft season. I got bamboozled and being a couple more redraft leagues. I had my first auction draft this weekend ever, so I'm real excited for that.
Nice.
So it's that season, man. It's great.
Yep, it's definitely that season. And so last week, I wasn't on the podcast. I was on vacation, Ryan, and you did a little take over the podcast show. How'd that go?
Well, man, we had some great guests on with Matt Hicks and JD from Goat District. We talked prop bets. Brought into fantasy a little bit. It was a good time, and they dropped some serious knowledge on us.
Good stuff. Yeah, I was able to check out a little bit of it, but being on vacation and, you know, having my daughter and my daughter's best friend both came with us, so I had to take care of them as well. So a little bit, yeah. I was able, couldn't catch the whole thing.
I didn't burn the house down.
All right, good stuff. All right, guys, and I mentioned at the top, we have a great guest tonight. He is the host of the SiriusXM Fantasy Show and also the founder of FantasyPoints.com. Mr. John Hansen. John, man, how you doing tonight?
Jeff and Ryan, I'm doing very well. Thanks for having me on the podcast. I'm very impressed with all the retweets your tweet promoting this got. So I'm expecting to be heard by a lot of people, I guess, on this podcast.
Yes, sir. So give us a chance, or give you a chance to talk about your site. You got a new site that you launched, I believe, at the beginning of this year, fantasypoints.com. I signed up for it in May. It's a great site, and I know it's kind of your baby. So give a chance to talk about it a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of the beauty of it is yeah, it's kind of my baby, but it's a lot of people's babies. In terms of what I've done for the last 25 years, founded Fantasy Guru, owned that for 20 plus years. I ended up selling the company and the site in 2015. I didn't really advertise that, but I did, and worked the site. Nothing really changed for a number of years, kind of parted ways a couple of years ago, and basically had a staff that I cultivated that really wanted to continue working with me. And, you know, I had so many lessons learned over the last 25 years that I kind of a waste to not make another run at perfection, if you will. So kind of gathered everybody up, formed a team, and we launched the company. I made most of the guys partners in the business. So they're completely fully invested, all in, all that. So it's me, Joe Dolan, who's on NFL radio, SiriusXM Fantasy Sports Radio for the last 10 years. You see what he does on Fantasy Points, number one for a five-year period. I believe that was 2014 through 2018.
Wow.
Definitely I was involved in those rankings, of course. Graham Barfield, formerly of NFL.com, who did work with us over at Fantasy Guru. Scott Barrett of Pro Football Focus, and our guy Tom Brawley, plus Adam Kaplan, Greg Cosell. So, you know, it's the old website, you know, initially was kind of all me, and then it was like some other voices, but it was always like Fantasy Guru. It's like, oh, you're the guru, you know. So it's not really like that. It's like, if you like my stuff, it's there, everything I've done, but it's got something for everyone. I'm a little bit more of a qualitative guy. Graham and Scott are more quantitative dudes. So you got the numbers, the data covered. Me, I'm a little bit of both, but more about, you know, old school film review, eyeball tests, common sense. Joe is kind of a hybrid of all of us, as well as Tom, plus Greg Cosell and his great film review, and Adam Kaplan, you know, legitimate NFL insider, talking to coaches every day, basically. So Yeah, I mean, it's going really well. I just think that, you know, fantasy in general this year, I think the business is down across the board. So it's hard to really know exactly how hurt we have been by that as a startup. But overall, the response has been tremendous and we're off to a great start.
Yeah, like I said, I signed up. I want to say it was in May. I heard you on a podcast talking about it and I went there to go check it out. And I've been a member ever since. And it's a pretty awesome site, man. It's got a lot of great stuff over there. And you mentioned some of those big names that, you know, a lot of the guys that, you know, listen to me, listen, you know, are on Twitter and they know those guys' names. And of course, I see you on or hear you on XM Radio. So it's great stuff, man. It's a great site. And I look forward to using it this season to help dominate my drafts.
Yeah. So we're going to be rolling out a lot of new stuff. Very challenging to kind of start from scratch, I got to tell you. But we've been hammering at it for quite some time. I think, not to go off on a tangent, but man, you know, one of the things that's always been difficult is in fantasy in this industry, you can't really plan a website for handling like heavy traffic and things like that. That's always kind of killed me. I think the fantasy sports industry is very unique in that regard. I mean, what other business is going to have like 80% of their customers hitting their website at the exact same time?
Yeah.
You know, like a Sunday morning. So I've had some horror stories over the years with that. You know, always get through it, but man, it's tough in that you cannot replicate the traffic that you'll get like this time of the year and then during the season, but hopefully we're good to go.
Yeah. Point in case on that, I'm sure you're familiar with the Scott Fishbowl, but whenever they go with their draft start every year, MFL goes down for a little bit because there's just so many people drafting at once. It's just impossible.
Yeah. And they're like, oh, get your stuff together. And you're like, we are, but you cannot replicate the traffic.
Yep.
It's just incredibly unique in that regard.
Yep. Definitely. All right, so we got lots to get to today. Let's go ahead and get to the news and notes.
News and notes from around the league.
All right, news and notes is brought to you, as always, by BUSR Sportsbook. Visit BUSR.com/going for two to place your bets on everything from horse racing to the NFL. Kentucky Derby's around the corner here, so go to BUSR.com/going for two to sign up and get a welcome bonus for $500. Again, that's BUSR.com/going for two. All right, guys, so we got tons of camp news. It's really all we have right now. There's no preseason, so we're just having to read Twitter and look at RotoWire constantly to get some of these updates. But one guy's name that keeps popping up a lot, and Ryan, I'll go to you first on this one because we haven't heard from you in a while, is Mr. Auden Tate. He's dubbed the offensive MVP for the Bengals camp. I know he's kind of buried there in the depth chart, but do you see any value in Auden Tate this year?
Allen a couple weeks ago who was kind of touting him up for us, but the path to starting and having playing time is not as far as it looks. We have AJ Green. I know he came back, was doing some work this week, but he's been up and down injury. John Ross isn't there. We've seen little nicks out of
T. Higgins. Oh
gosh. Yeah, T. Higgins. We saw some nicks on T. Higgins. The only one we've seen healthy really is Tyler Boyd, and that leaves a lot of targets and opportunity on the board for Tate. And when he showed up last year, he had some big games. I know against Baltimore, he almost put close to 100 yards, touchdowns. He performs when he's been on the field, even though everyone says he's slow and not that big of an athlete. He knows what he's doing out there. And if the opportunity is there, that team's going to have to pass. Somebody has to catch it.
Yeah, there's another guy out there that was deemed slow when he played for your team and for my team, Mr. Anquan Boldin. He had a pretty good career, I think. So, and I'm not saying that he's going to be Anquan Boldin, but you don't have to necessarily be fast all the time in order to be a good football player. John, let's go to you on this one as well. Do you put any stock in this as far as the chemistry with Joe Burrow and Auden Tate? You know, being a rookie like Burrow is and having that kind of go-to guy in camp, does that kind of bleed over into the regular season, you think?
I think it might. I think that number one, it absolutely is a great sign and news for Burrow because they actually have one of the deepest receiving cores in football. You know, there's a guy that has been there forever and he's a free agent next year, Alex Erickson. Mm-hmm. Like he's balling. Like that guy's good. Like I don't know why he doesn't get on the field, but he's actually pretty damn good.
Yep.
But I wrote an article on fantasypoints.com in June called Dynasty Dart Throws. And I profiled Auden Tate because I was very impressed last year. I mean, he was more mainly kind of a red zone guy. Obviously, they tried to get him the ball there. He only had one touchdown, but at 6'5". But I have had I have access to some tape. So I've seen some cut-ups of him.
Nice.
In camp. Man, he is balling. Like, it looks good. Like, he's kind of what I call a Mr. Relevant guy. You take him with your last pick.
Right.
Basically, see what you see. Maybe he's the first guy you cut. But I do not believe in T. Higgins this year. John Ross is kind of a disaster. And A.J. Green's 32 with some injury problems. So yep. I think some way, shape, or form, Tate is going to be a factor.
Yeah, I agree. I think the path is definitely there for him to get some starts this year and get some playing time. And like I said, that chemistry with Joe Burrow is going to be key because I think we saw a little bit last year. I know they were both rookies, but Slayton and Daniel Jones, they had a chemistry in the offseason, and then they kind of came over to the regular season as well, and they had a pretty good season. So,
and he's free.
And he's basically free, exactly.
He is free.
Yep,
yeah, exactly. He is absolutely free. But, yeah, that's another good point, of course. You know, these quarterbacks, these young quarterbacks, do tend to cling to certain dudes. Now, he is doing very well with Tyler Boyd, but, you know, if I were Joe Burrow, hell yeah, I'd be throwing it to a dude who's playing at a high level,
yep.
And he's really elevated his game this year, and he's also 6'5".
Yep, it's huge. Yep, good stuff. All right, this next news just broke today, so I had to add it to our list here. It seemed to be more serious originally than I thought. As David Montgomery's injury. John, I'm going to go back to you first on this one. I know we haven't gotten the official word yet. They're saying groin strain, but we don't know the severity of it or how long he might be out. Does this do anything for you in your rankings? Are you moving David Montgomery down a little bit?
Probably going to move him down a little, which, you know, is a shame because we just moved him up about a week ago with all the reports and talking to people out there saying he does look better. He's moving better, very, you know, lacking in terms of explosiveness last year. He doesn't have a great margin for error, and the barrel line was not good at all. But, you know, I actually talked with a Bear beat writer about 2 hours ago. Didn't have a great update. Obviously, we're still waiting on the MRI. But, guys, don't hold your breath getting a definitive update from Matt Nagy. I think we may have to actually wait to see what the organization does because they're perilously thin at running back, as you know. I mean, Cordarrelle Patterson's not going to cut it. Tariq Cohen's never had more than – he's never had 100 carries. I do like Cohen this year. But, you know, Ryan Nall and Artavis Pierce.
Yeah.
So if they sign someone, that's going to be a problem. But you know what? I think it's fair to say week one's in serious question. It's just a question of how far do we knock him down. He was looking good before this injury, and no doubt about it, he's a huge part of their offense. Obviously, he's a volume back, and you know he's not going to be as effective if he doesn't get the volume. So it's a big story, no doubt about it.
Yeah, I know, Ryan. I wrote an article. I know back early in June or July, and talking about that volume that David Montgomery gets. You know, we thought he could possibly get 300 touches this year. He had 240 something last year. Does this do anything for your rankings a little bit, Ryan, for Montgomery?
Yeah, it's going to be a wait and see. Hopefully he just falls a couple rounds in drafts where he's still a value because you're scared off. But you have to worry about it at least a little bit. But kind of what John said, you got to see if they pick up a free agent here. What kind of move are they going to make to show how serious it really is?
Where do you have you guys? Where is he now on your board at running back?
I'm pulling mine up right now. Let's see.
He's my 24.
Yeah. We got him at 22.
I got him at 23, and I haven't moved him yet. So he's 23 previous injury. Yep.
It won't be far, maybe 28, 29, somewhere like that.
Yeah, I agree.
I don't love what's underneath him.
Yep.
For me.
Yeah, true.
All right, sticking with the running backs here, we're going to go to a guy in Las Vegas now, Josh Jacobs. Beat reporter says that he should easily double his totals of receptions last year, which was 20. So we're looking at 40 plus receptions. If he gets that kind of volume in the passing game there, do you think his value can put him into that RB1 territory, John?
100%. No doubt about it. I mean, he's a very good receiver out of the backfield. We saw that at Alabama, and I love how he finishes too when he catches the ball in the flat and, you know, takes it uphill or downhill and north-south. But you know, I've heard just rumblings that there's still some concern about this shoulder. So, you know, we keep hearing that he's going to be more involved in the passing game. And I was 3 feet away from Mike Mack at the combine when he's talking about it, dead serious, looking me right in the eye, talking about phase two in year two is all about getting him involved in the passing attack. But all their moves, you know, kind of contradict that. Yep. First and foremost, re-signing Jalen Richard, drafting Lynn Bowden, bringing in Devontae Booker and Theo Riddick. Now, I don't think Riddick or Booker will make the team, so that'll help. I had him inside our top 12 at running back. I think we're going to pull him back just a little bit, but you know, he's mighty appealing. You know, he's got a 3-down skill set, very good O-line. Obviously, I'm very high, not very, but I'm pretty damn high on the Raider offense overall. I just wish, you know, I didn't have these lingering concerns, but I see all these beat writers talking up the work in the passing attack. So I do think that's for real. I've got him with 39 grabs. I think that's a fair assessment on his role increasing, but let's not go bananas here and give him 60.
Right. I think 40 is probably a good number there. And Ryan, so I traded Christian McCaffrey earlier this off season, and part of that package was Josh Jacobs. What do you think? Think I made a mistake getting Josh Jacobs here? You think that he's going to be an RB1?
I mean, I hope you got a lot more back with it.
Yeah, so plenty more than that. But I'm just curious, if I gave up the best running back in the game to get Josh Jacobs, am I good?
I love Josh Jacobs this year. I mean, you mentioned the passing game. That's what he was drafted for. That's what he was used at Alabama. Like, in college, that was his forte there. And I have him at 37 receptions. That's before any of the news came out. But, yeah, man, he's built to be their horse there. I can't see where he doesn't get volume. Gruden's run backs into the ground, and he's built to take that volume right now. And he doesn't have many miles from college on him, which makes it even more appealing. So I like that.
Oh, sorry.
Go ahead, John.
So one thing is, he was only like 48th among running backs in routes run. Gruden loves Jalen Richard in hurry up mode. So if they're playing from behind in the fourth quarter, don't expect to see Jacobs out there. It's going to be Richard.
Yeah. Good point.
You know,
yeah.
The upside's probably capped a little bit in the passing game.
Yeah. Good point. Like you mentioned, they did resign him. So that kind of puts a little bit of damper on that, cause I'm sure they resigned him for a reason. So yeah, I agree there. I think he's an RB1. He's a low end RB1, high end RB2 for me. And I do think he does increase a little bit in the passing game. And that offense, like you mentioned, is much improved. And, you know, Derek Carr gets a bad rep for a lot of things, but he's an accurate quarterback. He gets the ball in their hands. So if he can do that with Jacob, I think his value definitely rises. All right, so we got tons of injuries to talk about. And I'm just not going to get to all of them. So we're just going to go through. I'm going to just kind of list them off, and we'll talk about ones that we're most worried about. So we got Kenyon Drake wearing a walking boot. We got Tyreek Hill with the hammy. We got Brandon Ayuk with a hammy. We had A.J. Green, who just came back today, but he had a hammy injury. Mike Williams had a shoulder. Deontay Johnson, leg injury. Miles Sanders, they're calling this a lower body injury. And then Darrell Henderson with a hammy issue as well. Ryan, I'll go to you first on this one. Are any of these injuries or any other ones that we hadn't talked about yet concern you a little bit going into the season?
I mean, a little bit. Drake in the boot isn't ideal for me, even though he claims that he started last year with a boot and was fine. But it was still a slow start for him to get into the offense in the season. That was under different circumstances, but I'm a little bit more worried for him and Ayuk, especially because it's a rookie trying to get used to that offense. Those are the two ones I'm really worried about the most, and Green, which we kind of hit on.
What about you, John? Is anybody on this list that concerns you?
Yeah, I think Mike Williams with the shoulder. I know he's played through a similar injury in the past, but he was looking pretty good this summer. You know, the route running was improved. It was a little more polished. And I think he is a pretty good fit for what they want to do. They're going to be conservative, run the ball. But when they do throw, they're going to be aggressive and throw it down the field. You know, Justin Herbert has a very strong arm. And, of course, Tyrod, probably the best thing that he does is throw a deep ball. So he's kind of a throw it and see it guy. And that meshes well with Williams, who's kind of a just throw it up kind of a guy. Contested catch, high point in the ball and all that. So that's a little bit of a buzzkill. A.J. Green does worry me just because of the advanced age at 32 years old. And Ayuk does absolutely worry me a little bit, even though Kyle Shanahan has been heaping praise on him. But a lot of these other injuries, it's a fine line between, you know, certainly, you know, not ignoring them, but also not overreacting. Many times this time of the year, coaches will just shut guys down.
Yep.
Like, you know, Drake and Tyreek Hill could be absolutely nothing. And I've been doing this for 25 years, so the evolution of the boots in the last 20 years, I mean, it used to be almost a death sentence. It's like, oh, my, cut him. He's in a boot. Cut him. Now it's like, oh, he's in a boot. You know, he removed the boot, and he's starting this. You know, yeah. Yesterday he removed the boot, now he's starting. So
exactly.
I'm not that worried about Drake and Hill.
Yeah, I agree. I think my biggest concern with the injuries is the fact that a lot of them are soft tissue injuries. You know, we got a ton of hammy injuries, and I think a lot of that comes down to, you know, there's no OTAs and there's no, you know, it's going to be a thing to watch out for even as we go through into the season, you know, with these fast speeding receivers and these hammy injuries can crop up quite a bit there.
Yep.
All right, so we're here tonight to talk draft strategies. It is redraft season. We've got, you know, everybody's on, you know, Facebook and Twitter now looking for their rankings and everything else. So tonight we're talking a little bit about some strategies and different strategies you can use in your drafts and going into the season a little bit as well. And the first one I want to talk about is, you know, it was popular a couple years ago and it still kind of crops up every now and then. But the zero RB strategy, is that still a viable strategy, you think, John?
No. And I made fun of people for it when it was a thing. And I understand the point in general, because we did hit a rough patch there in the middle of the 2010s where it was pretty treacherous dealing with the running backs. But I wrote at the time that, you know, the NFL can be very cyclical, as can fantasy football. And lo and behold, the next year, the year I wrote it, whatever year it was, 2016, maybe, you know, the running backs had a pretty good year. The problem now with doing that is everyone's in the running back business. You know, I mean, you look at the first couple of rounds in high stakes and like 59% of the picks are running backs, which pushes the wideouts down the board. I also think there are fewer stud wideouts right now. I mean, once you get past the obvious studs, you know, Michael Thomas, maybe, you know, Chris Godwin. I don't actually put DeAndre Hopkins on that list. Ooh. Julio, Tyreek, Davante Adams, of course. There's a little bit of a drop off there. So, yeah, I've always been about balance. So I like to spread it out and, you know, get at least one stud running back. But ironically enough, this year I'm kind of all in on going heavy on the running backs because everyone else is. And if you don't, you're just not going to get a bell cow and you're probably not going to get an impact player. Maybe you get lucky, but I do not see it. The other thing is wide receiver. I've been doing this 25 years. It's never been deeper than it is in 2020. So I don't know why you'd want to load up on four straight wide receivers. And then you're in, you know, round six. And you're like, oh, wow, DJ Chark's available. He's really good. I can't draft him, though. He'll be my seventh receiver.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I think I'm with you as well. I never actually bought into the zero RB. I understood the philosophy on it and I read the article. I don't think I've ever used it in a draft of mine, and I don't know how it would have turned out. But yeah, running backs to me, even when it was sort of like a lull there, I think even more so there, you had to get the top running backs because after you got past those top few, there wasn't much left after that. What about you, Ryan? What are your thoughts on zero RB?
Yeah, I'm making a complete sweep one. I've never bought into it. It doesn't make sense with the way the draft goes and how the ADP is now. All the running backs are going early. And kind of like you said, there's the few elite receivers. Then there's this bunch of like wide receiver 8 through 42. Who it's not that big of a difference. It might be 10 or 20 points, and that's not a ton. When you see that drop off after running back 8 and your head's ready to explode because you have James White as your running back 1 and you're screwed.
Yeah.
So I'm against it.
Yep.
Especially this year, the way the talent is.
All right. We'll talk about some positions here that is sort of, depending on who you talk to, with the tight ends and the quarterbacks. Some people like to take their tight ends early, you know, get those George Kittle and the Travis Kelce's. And some go super late and get those guys like we did last year with Mark Andrews going in like the 12th or 13th round and hope that he pops. And same thing with quarterbacks, too, going early with quarterbacks. Of course, you got to go early to get Lamar Jackson, Patrick Mahomes. But then you got guys going super late like the Matthew Staffords of the world. John, where do you stand on this thing with the Titans and the quarterbacks?
Yeah, I've always said my opinion's always been, I believe, your best chance to form the best starting lineup is to wait on both positions. Question is, how long do you wait? I'm not a guy who acts and proceeds as if he doesn't really care. And like, I'll take whatever's available around 13. I like to get kind of the best of both worlds. I'm also flexible too, because, you know, I really like Dak Prescott this year. I know it's not optimal. I'm not actively targeting him, but if he slips to round 6 and I already have 2 to 3 really good running backs and a couple of good wideouts, let's say, like, I'll take him. Like, there are a lot of dudes, obviously. I don't know for sure if Tom Brady's going to be great this year. You know, I'm not totally sure that Baker's going to bounce back. I think he will. Stafford is kind of an enigma to me. So there's some uncertainty there. I'll tell you what, though. I do know that Dak's going to be good because he's always good.
Yep.
And now they're loaded. So I'll consider it. But I would ideally get a little bit of the best of both worlds. So I want a knockout blow. I want to take a shot with a guy who I think could be like a league winning type. Certainly don't want to pay the price. Now, the last 2 years, we've had Mahomes and Lamar.
Yeah.
I don't think we're going to get that this year. But, you know, for me, the next best thing is Josh Allen. Very high on Josh Allen. And I really haven't been up until this point. And then like a Carson Wentz, hold off a little bit from there. Maybe Daniel Jones, you know, Burrow, a lot of options. I like Goff this year, but yeah, generally I'm holding off on both positions. I do love nailing a sleeper tight end. I do understand that an edge can be gained at tight end if you go with a stud. We have a software fantasy points generator that's got a lot of analytics and really built in there. And oftentimes it will recommend not Kelsey or Kittle. Often it does go Andrews. So he's kind of like the best of both worlds. But Andrews was my breakout guy last year. I had one. It was him. So I want to get this year's Andrews pretty much every year.
Nice. Yeah, I think me and Ryan had Andrews pretty high too. I think we even had him in our top 12.
And I had him 7 last year.
Yeah, I think I had him like 8 or 9. Yeah, it was definitely.
I'm a Ravens fan, so I was biased.
that's freaking absurd.
Yeah.
I think I had him.
I just saw the targets.
13.
I followed the targets just from that, but I maybe went a little bit too far. Probably should have been like 9 or 10.
I could tell by your accent, by the way. You had to be Philly or Baltimore. You had a couple words there.
Actually, Pittsburgh.
Oh, really?
Wow. Yeah, I'm just a Ravens fan.
Ravens fan in Pittsburgh. It's interesting. You know,
Joe Flacco always fit in there because there's a similarity with South Jersey and the Baltimore accent. You know, like you'll see someone who's like, "Yo, what's going on? You know, what's going on? I'm going."
That sounds like a Pittsburgh accent.
Well, there you go. Flacco, by the way, lives in my hometown here in South Jersey. So
nice.
Run into him once in a while.
Nice. All right, so I'm going to ask you, Ryan, on this one, and it's funny we mentioned Mark Andrews and you know Lamar Jackson a little bit. I know you go late on these positions as well, but when is the round that you're looking at getting a Mark Andrews or Lamar Jackson if they're there? I mean, what round are you taking them?
Mark Andrews, I'm thinking late third-ish, maybe fourth. I can't buy him that early. It's just so hard for me from a team building concept where I'm missing out on those elite running backs or receivers to take earlier than that. And same with Lamar. Like, if he slides, yes, but I'm not reaching for him. He's awesome, but it's not worth messing up my roster and missing out on other positions when QB is so deep once you get past the top two guys.
Yeah, I agree. I think that tight end is actually pretty deep as well. I think you can find some of those guys, you know, pretty late.
Deepest ever.
Yeah.
This is the biggest year for potential tight end breakout. I'm not lying here. Like literally in the history of fantasy football, like there have never been this many intriguing young breakout types than there are this year.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. I've been playing since 98. I know you got me beat by at least 10 years probably, but I've been around for a little bit too, 22 years. And you're right. I mean, tight end typically was that position you just filled it because you had to fill it. Now it's like you got all these guys there that can actually potentially be league winners for you at the tight end position.
You were like drafting Pete Metzelaars in like round 9 back in 88. And just happy with like 39 catches with 5 touchdowns.
Right, exactly. All right, I want to talk about the running back heavy strategy, and I don't mean just drafting 2 running backs in the first 2 rounds. I know we have Stompy come on our show a couple of times, and he'll go 4 running backs to start his draft in sometimes. I'm curious to your opinion on that, John. Do you like going that deep with the running backs?
No, I'm a big balance person, so I don't like to have a deficiency anywhere. So I think if you do that, let's say even 3, and which, believe it or not, this year I'm actually not against it. But if you do go 3 straight running backs and then you go in round 4, boy, it's, you're forced, I would be at least, to go somewhere else. So I like to spread it out early in my drafts to give myself options, because I'll go BPA often, you know, best player available. But if I go 3 straight running backs, I'm really looking to do something other than running back. So I am heavy this year on it. Ideally, I'd like to get three with my first five picks.
Yeah.
That's about as heavy as I'll typically go.
Yeah, I agree. And I mentioned Stompy, and he won the Fishbowl 2 years ago, and he did go four running backs to start that. Now, granted, you got tons of flex spots in those kind of leagues, so it's a little bit different there. But, Ryan, what are your thoughts on running back heavy, and how many running backs do you want to have in the first five rounds?
I'm really hating that I keep agreeing with everything you're saying here. But I do three in the first four rounds, maybe, if I was there. Because you can build – I said we can build those other positions later because how deep they are. But I couldn't imagine doing four for four position because you're missing out on some talent there because you're taking guys – you're going to be passing up on higher value players at other positions if you're really just reaching to it. If it falls, fine. If the talent and the best player available – is running back, I'm okay with it, but I'm not forcing myself to do it.
Yeah, I agree with you there. So you kind of mentioned BPA, both you did, best player available. There's a thing called tier-based drafting where you basically, you know, you have your tiers and your rankings and you draft based on your tiers and best player available. Where are you at with that strategy, John? Do you kind of do tier-based drafting when you do your drafts?
Absolutely. We have downloadable cheat sheets on the website Fantasy Points. I've got a Google Doc that I use to control everything, and every time I update, I've got to check on my tiers, and it automatically, you know, produces the tier, and you know, it's color coded and all that. Absolutely. I mean, the old value based drafting is kind of tier based, and maybe you're, you know, in a little bit of a middle of a position run, but the next best quarterback is on a lower tier. I'll probably ignore the damn position run. It is useful to know where the drop-offs are when you can, you know, okay, looking at quarterback. Oh, nope. A couple of good ones off the board. We just dropped a tier. So let me pivot on over to another position that I've always been in total agreement with because there are tiers. The problem is sometimes coming up with the tiers.
Yeah.
It really can't be automated. It really can't. You can't say, okay, if there are 7 points separating two players, that's a tier. Now, it has to be done manually. Yep. I don't think there's any other way.
I agree. Ryan, I know you do a lot of rankings with Fantasy Pros, and they have a tier option there as well. How much stock do you put in tiers when you're doing your drafting?
Yeah, I only use tiers because it's how you know if you're reaching for a player. Because if I'm looking at the receiver list, and I have five guys who I have ranked within a couple points, and I don't see that big of a difference, and I know one of them's going to come back to me, why am I going to take him there when I could get another position? So 100% behind tier-based drafting. And your tier doesn't have to be, like you said, it has to be manual because I could have two people in my running back one tier, McCaffrey and Barkley, and then I can have 7 people in my fourth tier. Like, it all depends on how you value the players. You have to put in the work for it to work for you, but it's the best way to do it.
Yeah. The other thing about tiers real quick, another thing that I do is for those who are maybe novices, don't follow it. And as we joked on Twitter, we love those people. let's say like, you know, it goes Mahomes, Jackson, Dak, Murray, Wilson, Deshaun are off the board. Well, our next quarterback is Josh Allen, but the ADP difference there is like 30 picks. So that's a good time to put the tier in to tell people, you know, you don't have to draft Josh Allen 2 picks after Watson goes.
Right. Exactly. That's 100% right. And I think also what it helps as well, I know, like I said, we're trying to redraft here. And, you know, a lot of us that do drafts during the offseason, we do slow drafts. You got 12 hours, 24 hours to think about it. A redraft league, typically you have 2 minutes on the clock. And you're looking at your tiers and someone snipes you right before your pick. And you're like, oh, crap, what do I do? It's a lot easier to look at the tiers and figure out who you're going to pick next because now you've been sniped. You don't got to be struggling through your rankings and trying to figure out who you're going to take. You can just reference your tiers and go with the best pick available.
Also, your dog, I believe, is a big fan of tiers.
Yes.
He's trying to tell us that.
Yeah, it's actually, I think it's my dog. Is it my dog in the background?
No, that's
Fitz. Someone's dog loves tiers. Yeah. That we know.
Yeah, Fitz. Fitz makes an appearance on the podcast quite a bit. And my dog tonight is upstairs. He's right up there. Usually he's in bed by now, but he's up there. I hear him barking too. So, all right, let's take a quick commercial break, guys. And we'll come back. We'll continue on the discussion here with the draft strategies. Got a few more to talk about. And then we'll get into some league winners. So hold tight.
In the unpredictable world of fantasy sports, when all hope seems lost and chaos and confusion rule, one hero will rise. And change everything. Goingfor2.com. Because no one remembers the extra point.
All right, guys, welcome back. I'm here with John and Ryan, and we're talking draft strategies. Before we get into the second part of our draft strategies, I want to quickly plug once again the Going for Two Grinders Championship. It's a week one contest on DraftKings. It's free to join. We're taking donations to go up for Toys for Tots. There's a FundMe page there. You just go to goingfor2.com/grinder to join. We're giving away. Let me get the belt out. We got this awesome belt here that we're giving away to the winner. The Going for Two Grinders Championship. Again, guys, go to goingfor2.com/grinder. I think we're up to about $900 raised for Toys for Tots. Hoping to get to about 15 before the season starts. So please go to there. Go to goingfor2.com/grinder and sign up, guys. All right, let's do draft strategies part two. And just kind of going through some of the things that people talk about a lot in redraft. And one of them is handcuffing, which I'm not a huge fan of in normal situations, but with this whole COVID thing going on, does that change any kind of philosophies on handcuffing, John?
Yeah, it does. I think we need to make more contingency plans than usual. You just got to be smart about it. I agree. Overall, you know, and in the recent past, I've not been that too concerned about it. There's certainly a lot of variables involved, like how many rounds, how deep is your bench, and all that. I mean, in an ideal world, there's usually a good 8 to 10 that are desirable. I would call those guys this year kind of must-haves, you know, like Chase Edmonds, obviously, with Kenny Drake banged up. Yep. But, you know, it's a little different this year, so I'm a little bit more into it. I also kind of look at some players as a little bit more appealing if their handcuffs are, I believe, are good and they're free. Because the one thing about Dalvin Cook, it's like, geez, man, I don't know if I feel like using a 9th-round pick on Madison. So I may go Joe Mixon because I'll get Giovanni Bernard in the 14th.
Right, right. That's true. That's a good point. That's something I hadn't even thought about because you're right. Madison, you got to pay a pretty penny for sometimes.
Yeah.
Ryan, what about you? What are your thoughts on handcuffing? And do you handcuff or do you consider handcuffing this year or anything besides running backs? Like, is there a wide receiver handcuff that you would consider?
I guess a little bit, but I'm not going out of my way to handcuff even this year. I like to handcuff other people's players, but not my own. But the one thing with it is you have to be careful with the handcuffing, who you're handcuffing with. Like, is that person your RB2? Like you mentioned Gio Bernard. Is he going to take over the workhorse role if something happened to Mixon, or is he still a receiving back? You got to look at that, I think, when you're looking at their depth charts and seeing how they're going to be using that offense. Because, like, we talked about Jalen Richard. He's not going to take over as the lead back, somehow, as Josh Jacobs. No. So if you're handcuffing, something like that might have a name. You might get that value in free agency or free later.
Yeah, that's a good.
And same goes with receivers. Are they going to come on the outside? Or is the slot, you think your slot receiver is going to move to number one? It's a completely different thing.
Yeah. Whenever the handcuff situation looks like it'll evolve into or devolve into a committee, I'm like, forget it.
Right.
You know. But you know, Tony Pollard in Dallas. Yeah. If I draft Zeke, I do want Pollard.
Yep.
Because Pollard is like a league winner. If Zeke's out, so is Chase Edmonds. But again, very few. Also, if it's muddy, you know, like Houston, forget it.
Right.
You know. Or if there's three dudes involved, like Indy, forget it.
Pittsburgh, I think, is another one. James Conner, and then a whole plethora of guys behind him.
Yeah. I do like Ryquell Armstead behind Leonard because I don't trust Leonard. You know, not much for the Rams. Miami, forget it. Minnesota, we talked about. Latavius Murray was phenomenal for those two games
right.
Without Kamara. So that's a good one there. Yeah, I mean, you know, there's not that many, really. I mean, with the end of the day, you really look at it, it's probably like 5, 6, you know, so I'll do it, but it's got to be perfect, you know, like Pollard or Edmonds.
Right. Yep. Agreed 100%. And that kind of goes with a question we had on Twitter. Joey, I'm going to mess his last name up, Pasquelli.
Just call him Joey Bag of Donuts.
There we go. He wanted to know, Ryan, you kind of touched on this a little bit. Is it a higher leverage play, in your opinion, to handcraft your running back? Or is it better to diversify a little bit and get another guy that might, you know, get the start occasionally? Like let's say Madison, for example. Do you handcuff your running back, or do you go get Madison, who has some value in even with Dalvin Cook healthy? Ryan, your mic is down really low.
Oh, sorry. The reason I like to handcuff other teams, players a little bit more, is not to like try to force a trade or anything like that. It's because that gives me an opportunity to have another starter later. Because if I have Madison on my team and I don't have Dalvin goes down, I have an extra starter plus whoever I have in place. So I like having where I'm going to have that depth down the line. And that gives me the most chance for an upside. Yes, it's good to be protected, but I'd rather have the good. So I'm trying to go big to win, and I think that gives me the best opportunity.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's kind of how I do it as well. I look at the value of the player. You know, I don't want to have that dead bench spot. Like, you know, you're going to have Christian McCaffrey's backup. I mean, it's, you know, it's not worth anything. And Christian McCaffrey could go down. I'm not saying that he won't. But if he doesn't, you have a dead spot on your bench that you're just holding on to a guy that's, you know, trying to protect yourself a little bit. So I agree. I think you get that guy that has a little bit of value to try to hope that you can get something out of him. All right, so handling bye weeks. This is always a question that I get every year around this time. You know, how you pay attention to your bye weeks. Do you want to get players of different bye weeks? Does it make your decision for you? If you have two different guys, you know, that you're kind of debating on and one's got the same bye week as another player, did you go with the player, you know, the other one? So, John, I'm going to go to you first, man. How do you handle your bye weeks when you're doing your drafting, or do you worry about it at all?
You know, I'm old enough to remember a time in the 80s when fantasy owners were about as worried about bye weeks as they were as, you know, the Russians, for example, you know, with the Cold War.
Right.
But things have evolved to the point where I really don't give a crap about it, other than if I'm drafting two quarterbacks, obviously I don't want them both to have the same bye week and likely two tight ends, but running backs and wide receivers, I don't pay much attention at all.
What about you, Ryan?
Yeah, I don't pay attention. And that lasted into the 2000s when I started playing, by the way, when people were worried about that.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, it's ridiculous. I don't care. If I lose 1 week because I have three guys on a bye week, guess what? I'm not going to have to deal with that again. I'm fine with it.
Right. Yeah. If you like the player, like the player. I mean, I've seen people, oh, I love him, but he's got the same bye week. I'm like, it's 1 week, dude.
Yep.
I mean, it's not like you're taking a zero, right? Yeah. I mean,
I'm not dropping in talent for that.
Right, yeah. Right. Kind of on that same note there, and I did have this in the show notes, just want to ask your opinion on this as well. Drafting players from the same team, like I just had a question just recently before the David Montgomery injury. He already had Allen Robinson, and he had a chance to get David Montgomery as well, and he didn't because he had Allen Robinson. Is that something you look at, John?
It is. It is a little scary. Now, you know, you don't want to put all your eggs in one basket and it be like a crappy basket. But, you know, if you're talking a potent, great offense, like I got no qualms. I mean, it's possible that round one, you're at the end of round one, you go Edwards-Helaire, and it's possible that Tyreek's the best player on the board. I'll do that.
Yeah.
But generally, I do try to avoid it just to avoid potential pitfalls. You know, you never know, a team may implode and then you're screwed. So I do try to avoid it if at all possible.
What about you, Ryan? Is that something that you do as well? Oh, lost you. There you are.
Yeah, I went and shut the door. We had dog number two screaming. but I assume you asked. I agree with that. Yeah. If it's a really elite offense, I don't mind. But I'm not trying to buy pieces of questionable offenses and players who I have to worry about.
Yep, good stuff. So just on a quick note here, I had a friend over the week that I was on vacation. He came and stayed with me for a couple of days, and he gave me some criticism on my podcast. He said that you and I, Ryan, and the guests sometimes agree too much, and tonight's podcast has done nothing to dispel that. We've been agreeing almost the whole show.
Yeah.
I I need to just turn into a bold take like character that just start lying.
I mean, you're not going to get anything like extremely cutting edge from me. That's not my deal. If you want that, go to Fantasy Points and read Scott Barrett,
right?
Or read Graham Barfield. I just like, I don't know, common sense, logic, a very extensive base of knowledge, if you will, after doing this 25 plus years. I mean, it's not real rocket science here. Common sense usually gets you, you know, pretty far if you've got good instincts, you know, a good foundation to form the good instincts. And that's always been a strength of mine. I've always had somehow some prescient kind of ability with it. You know, the first time I was ever introduced to fantasy football, I never heard of it. And then an hour later, I was drafting.
Right.
And I led the league in points. Didn't win the damn league, but I did lead the league in points. So, yeah, you're not going to find anything like earth shattering for me.
And we had a thing on YouTube, Ryan. I just wanted to mention someone that we know, Kyle Senra. He wanted to know, you know, something that we'll disagree on is who is the better Harbaugh? So, of course, you're the Ravens fan. I'm the Niners fan. That's something that we would disagree on.
I mean,
I got to go John. I'm going John.
Yeah, one has an NFL job. The other can't win in Michigan.
Yeah, and one of them won Super Bowl and one of them didn't. And that's still something I don't talk about. All right, let's get to some of these draft strategies. A couple more here. Strength of schedule. I know there's like on a couple websites they got strength of schedule that you kind of look at. Are they in a tough division with good defenses? Ryan, I'm going to go you first this time. What are your thoughts on strength of schedule?
I don't pay attention to it. I mean, one, we don't know how good defenses are really going to be this year. It changes so much every year. We know possibly the elite ones, and I'm not going to not draft a talented player because of one, possibly 2 weeks of this division. I don't pay attention to it at all. If it's two guys who are neck and neck for me, maybe, but doubtful.
Yeah. I'm assuming you're on the same page there, John.
For the most part, I've always done a little projected strength of schedule. It's not incredibly scientific, but it doesn't really go off of the numbers from last year. I just grade the teams based on current personnel. Obviously I consider the year before, and that's worked out pretty well. But, you know, when you rank strength of schedule for, let's say, the running game or the passing game, especially the running game, it's only like the top five and bottom five that I'll really maybe look at. And even then, you know, I'm looking at playoff weeks. You know, if there's a particular team or two that has a brutal schedule in the playoffs, I'll absolutely be cognizant of that. But otherwise, it's really just probably one of like 12 key elements I look at. Which, you know, puts it at less than 10% of my, you know, brain processing there. And, maybe if I'm really stuck on two players and I have nothing else to make the call with, I'll use strength of schedule to break the tie.
Right. Yeah. So I think it's just a tiebreaker, kind of splitting hairs. And Kyle had a good point on the YouTube as well. And he kind of, you know, brought this up. If you're streaming defenses, he says the only time he looks at it really is for that week one defense. If you're going to stream that defense right that first week, maybe you look at who they're playing. Obviously, that's kind of how I would look at it as well. And I typically stream defenses in redrafts.
I do try every year to get a defense that I'll actually not want to drop after week one. Most of the time I fail, but I did hit it last year. I had Pittsburgh as my number two ranked defense.
Nice.
And I had the Patriots at five. So I do try. This year, I'm going with Tampa Bay. That's my favorite sleeper defense.
Yeah, I've got Tampa Bay at the sleeper defense. I also have the Colts up there as well. They're one of my teams that I've been kind of, you know, was targeting a little bit. They spent a lot of draft picks on defense. They, you know, they went and, you know, traded for a, you know, for an all-star down there in the middle. So
yeah,
I think the Colts will be a good one.
I have absolutely no idea how the Colt defense will do it this year. I have no clue.
Yeah, it's definitely a little bit of a reach there, but I've heard the Bucs, and the Bucs are definitely up there. And if people look at the second half of the last season, the Bucs were really good at the second half of last season. So
they were, yeah. And I don't, honestly, I don't look at other rankings at all. So I thought I was going to be like the only one way out in front of the Tampa Bay Bucs, but apparently not, right? So I don't like to look at other rankings. No offense to anyone else, I just don't like to be swayed by anything. I like to kind of just go off of my own thought process. A couple of times I've been swayed by looking at other rankings in years past. I got burned every time. So I'm like, that's it. I'm not looking at any other rankings.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I try to do the same thing. Even when I'm doing daily fantasy, I do, and I play a lot of DraftKings stuff, and I'll do my advice column and get them up before anybody else does, because I want to have my own opinions in there and I don't want to be influenced by anybody else. And it tends to work out for me that way as well.
Yep.
All right. So let's get into some league winners. These are some guys that we think this year. We'll go position by position and look at some guys that we think could be a league winner this year, guys you want to target in your drafts. And they could be, you know, ranked anywhere as far as, you know, the top rank, mid rank, you know, if you're looking at those low tier guys as well. Ryan, we'll go to you first. Let's do quarterbacks. Give me a league winner you have at quarterback.
I'm going to skip my one who I've talked about way too much. And I'm going to go with Gardner Minshew. It's not going to be pretty. I don't think it's going to be like those where we know he's going to have a fit hyper efficient, but that's a terrible defense. That team's going to have to throw the ball a ton and they're going to have a lot of volume. He has a connection with DJ Shark. I could see him having 550 plus pass attempts this year, and that leads the yardage. He's the perfect guy for me to stream a quarterback mixed with like an older vet who I could trust. It's not like Gardner Minshew there. I think he has a nice boom potential if we're going a little bit deeper at QB.
Yeah, I think also on top of that, you can get him so late in your drafts that you can pretty much stack up your other positions there and have Gardner Minshew, you know, be a good solid there. What about you, John? Quarterback, league winner, who you got?
Well, the late pick, I believe, should be Cam Newton. You know, we all know what Cam can do, but my favorite pick, we even have league winner designations on our cheat sheets over at Fantasy Points. Nice. If you have the Fantasy Point logo, that means the guy's a league winner. I got to go Josh Allen again. I was not a huge Allen guy coming out when he came out of college and all that. I did actually sit down with him at the combine and was absolutely amazed at just how enthused he was and willing to do whatever it took to dominate in the NFL. But he has incrementally improved. They know he's got some issues, but they've addressed them by, you know, working with him and coaching him and all that. And I know he's pretty high on Brian Daboll, but, you know, they just surround him with talent. Yeah. You know, he's not going to make the receivers better. So let's get a bunch of good receivers, you know, with John Brown looking good again this summer and Steph Diggs. I love Dawson Knox. Great kid there. A couple of pass catching backs and Cole Beasley in the slot. And he runs. He's the cheapest of the running quarterbacks. My gut is that if anyone emerges as a, you know, a juggernaut at quarterback this year, it'll be Josh Allen.
Nice. I love that pick there. I love it. Yeah, I think my league winner this year, and he's been getting disrespected, and he was actually pretty good last year, even though he got disrespected, and it's Jared Goff. Jared Goff is outside of the top 12 outside of the top 12 in most of the rankings that I've seen. I think I have him outside of the top 12, but I do think Jared Goff is one of those guys you can wait on. The offense rebounds a little bit. I think Cam Akers helps that offense, gives them what Todd Gurley couldn't do last year. And I think Jared Goff has a great rebound season. All right, let's look at league winners for the running back positions. John, we'll go to you first. Give me your RB league winner.
I'm a Jonathan Taylor guy. I know even guys on our own staff kind of disagree. I understand that we can't expect him to catch a ton of balls. Marlon Mack, a good receiver, doing more work in camp this summer in the passing game, and also of course Naheem Hines. But I always find that there's a great buying opportunity with the rookies because they're you know, they're unknowns. So I like to draft off of next year's cheat sheet. I think the next year Taylor will be a top 12 pick. I think you know, for example, Cam Akers will be a second round pick. Great example would be Miles Sanders. You know, last year, Miles Sanders was no lock. Yep. Had to deal with Jordan Howard and all that. What happened? Cream rose to the top. What was his ADP last year? 75?
Yeah.
What's it this year? 9? So guys with that profile. So I'm all in on Jonathan Taylor. Even if it doesn't really work out, no one's going to really say anything to me because he's going to do well.
Right.
And he's, you know what I mean? Like, you know, from an analyst perspective and like sticking my neck out, I mean, it's... I don't feel like I'm sticking my neck out, you know, and if he does what I think he can do, he will be a league winner.
Good point. What about you, Ryan? Who's your league winner?
John, I'm super glad you mentioned my guy in your, when you're talking right there, that was Cam Akers.
Yeah.
If you look at the Rams offense and when it was really clicking 2 years ago, that offense ran through Todd Gurley, getting a ton of carries and having a lot of volume in the passing game. I don't see Brown or Henderson as anything competing in that. and watched a lot of Connick Cam Akers in college, and he's a very good pass catcher. You can line him up in the slot. You can put him on the outside. He catches the ball in the backfield. And that's what makes McVay's offense go well. And I think he's the perfect guy to get that started. And if he shows it early, that volume could be crazy. He's going between the fifth and the sixth round right now, and he could end up being an RB2 for you, or maybe better. Who knows? So I think he's a guy who could be a superstar play.
Yeah, you kind of thought about that a little bit, Ryan. They also take Cam Akers as well. So in the interest of time, we'll just move on to the receivers. John, give me your league ring wide receiver.
Hollywood Brown. Done. Good night, everybody.
Nice. I know Ryan's good with that one. What about you, Ryan? What's your league winner?
I've got Christian Kirk. I think he's been a guy who's been very slept on ever since that D-hop thing. We all loved him before that. But listen, Larry Fitzgerald is getting old. Even though he's still probably going to put up 500, 600 yards this year. And they're going to throw the ball. They're going to be in the top five in pass attempts this year. There's going to be plenty of balls to go around. Christian Kirk's electric. He's a big playability. And unlike those other two, he's going to do a lot of those underneath routes, a lot of places where they're getting him the ball in space. So he has a role in that offense. And I think he can still be a playable wide receiver week in, week out. And he could be a high-volume PPR guy. So I love Christian Kirk there.
All right, good stuff. We're going to skip tight end because I know John's got to get out of here pretty quickly here. So we're going to go right to our forgotten fantasy player.
Get ready for goingfor2.com's Forgotten Fantasy Player of the Week.
All right, John, we have another guy that comes on the podcast that's been playing forever, too. His name is John Lobb. He always brings back these super really old players from back in the day. John. Yeah, John's a great guy. We love having him on the show. So are you going to go back that deep with your forgotten fantasy player? Who you got?
Probably. 1989, I used the 11th pick of my hometown draft, first pick of round two, on this receiver who the year before only caught 55 balls for 791 with one touchdown. Now, I also took Barry Sanders with my first pick, 10th overall. The player who I thought at the time and in the 80s, early 90s was as good, maybe better than Jerry Rice, is Sterling Sharp, one of my all-time favorite players who does not get the credit that he deserves. Absolute monster. Played in the slot a lot, by the way. Wasn't particularly tall. He did play a lot of Z as well, but man, he was a man among boys. And then I was able years later to work with him on NFL Network in 04. So I worked with the guy for a full year and we became, you know, pretty good work friends and all that. Sterling Sharp, probably the greatest receiver in league history, not in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, I agree with that 100%. That's a great one. I knew you'd kind of go back to the deep ones there, and I love that. That's a great, great call for sure. All right, let's go around the room. Give us your Twitter handle and, you know, what you're working on, where we could follow you at, anything you want to plug. John, we'll go to you first.
Fantasy_guru and the new website, fantasypoints.com. I've got a promo code for anyone listening that's interested. Hanson10 will get you 10% off. The two subscription packages we have that includes DFS and betting coverage during the season.
Nice. Good stuff. Ryan?
Find me on Twitter, Ryan Sirpas at FOS534. Find me here at GoFor2.com and find me at the Dynasty Draft Room.
All right, guys. As always, you could find me on Twitter at JeffLambert77. I mentioned earlier the Grinders Championship. Go to GoFor2.com/grinder to join up on that. And with that, that's a wrap.